Welcome back, everyone. Today we are joined by marketing and research extraordinaire Chris Malone to discuss his latest book that he co-authored called The Human Brand. Now, Chris is, he knows a thing or two about brands and branding, having held executive marketing positions at Choice Hotels, Coca-Cola, P&G, and a professional sports arena with the National Hockey League and National Basketball Association. So I'm sure you got lots of stories to tell. Chris, good to talk to you.
Thanks very much, Mo. Great to be with you.
Chris, I think we're all pretty convinced now that, especially in our, you know, the era that we're living in today, that all brands are human. I mean, really, there are no exceptions. So I'm asking you to put your entrepreneurial hat on for a moment. You're an emerging business. Knowing that, how does that influence your approach to growing your company?
I think there is greater opportunity now for entrepreneurs and smaller companies than ever before, particularly as relates to how they can better compete with larger competitors. And I feel like over the course of my career, I've got trained in sales and marketing by the P&Gs, the Coca-Colas, all the ones that you mentioned, and went to grad school and all of that. And I think what I have realized through the work we've done over the last few years, that about half of everything I thought I knew about how to grow a business and how to build customer loyalty is either no longer true or perhaps may not have ever been true, and that it is so much more driven by the human aspects of the business that we do every day and not so much by our competency and whether we have a better mousetrap, that it really has caused me to think differently. And I think it's a great opportunity for entrepreneurs to leverage and take advantage of that.
Hasn't it always been that way, Chris? I mean, isn't this human? I mean, were we targeting aliens or what? Why now with this human aspect?
Well, you know, I think that the world has changed in the last 10 years in a way that is different from, you know, for over 150 years. And so let's go back and imagine for a moment, you know, what things were like before the Industrial Revolution. And for actually most of human history, commerce between humans was conducted face to face. And the choices that we made were as much about what we knew about the person we were dealing with and the relationship that we had with them as it was the product or service that they were offering. And in fact, the relationships they had were crucial to their survival on both sides of that equation. Whether it was a merchant in a small community or a customer in a small town, they didn't have direct deposit, they didn't have credit cards, they often had to pay with IOUs or barter. And so that relationship was really critical, and there was a lot of balance in that relationship. If a merchant did wrong by a customer, pretty much everyone in town would know about it by Sunday church, and that merchant would be under pressure to really make it right or risk damaging his relationship with the rest of the people in the town and, you know, perhaps lose his livelihood. And so now I think what has happened is when the introduction of mass production and distribution and communication, that natural relationship that existed between customers and merchants really got disrupted. You know, if they're making ivory soap in Cincinnati and shipping it to San Francisco, at that time, it certainly wasn't possible for the manufacturer to have direct contact with customers. There were intermediaries and wholesalers and retailers and so forth. And this notion of a relationship between the two of them really went away. And that is during the period where kind of all of our traditional notions of marketing, branding, selling, advertising, promotion grew up in this, what I would call kind of artificial environment that I call kind of the Middle Ages of marketing. But now with the introduction of e-commerce, social networks, and mobile devices, I think it's bringing us back to the future where those companies and brands can have a direct relationship with those customers again, and communities are rising up and putting pressure back on merchants to make things right. And so now we are entering into kind of a relationship renaissance, if you will, where we can use this technology to manage those relationships in a more scalable, trackable, and efficient way than has been possible for over 150 years. So that's what I think is changing for us.
Chris, and there's always been a time where, you know, the lines between branding as we know it and marketing as we've come to know it have always been blurred. So now that this human element is involved much more so than ever before, how do you distinguish between building a brand and marketing that brand?
I think that they are really one and the same. And what I think we've come to learn is that what marketing really is about, it's about building relationship with another person. And that the way that we build relationships with other people is driven by the same perceptions that we have of brands and humans. The work that Dr. Susan Fiske and I have done over the last 3 years, we took her very widely researched and validated model of human perception that has been validated in 40 countries, and it's been shown to be predictive of over 80% of how humans interact and form relationships. relationships with one another. We tested that model over on 40 companies and brands, and we're able to find that the exact same thought process that we use to form relationships with people is how we're connecting with brands and companies. And so that is exactly what we should be doing when we think about marketing, leveraging the warmth and competence, these basic perceptions that we have of humans, and trying to build that into our brand and our communication and our interactions with our customers.
And I'm going to get to the warmth and competence in a second, but you know, what you just mentioned really triggered a thought. It's a lot easier today, certainly, to build a name for yourself, as you mentioned, for entrepreneurs and for your business. But the one thing you really can never fake anymore is you just can't fake not being real. I mean, you have to be real because people see right through it. You can't fake loyalty. I mean, do you see now that that's just emerging on the forefront?
It absolutely is. And part of what, you know, I got trained in earlier in my career was this notion that you could make your brand whatever you wanted it to be. You could create a persona, you could create an image, you could create a facade, if you will, that projected a certain image and people would believe that. The reality is that that's not really possible anymore. There's no such thing as a secret. There is so much more information around, and that very quickly we're able to see through things that are not authentic because there is much more two-way communication and much more information available. And so as a result, that consumers have become extremely sophisticated and extremely savvy about seeing through things that are not genuine. And actually, a big part of our psychology is that we're wired, particularly when we interact with other people, is have a remarkable ability to judge their intentions and abilities based on very little information. So you're absolutely right. That authenticity is going to show through whether you want it to or not.
And you know, let's talk about warmth and competence, because I'm really happy because they've come up in our broadcast over the last couple of weeks a lot. So I know that it's real, but yet the overwhelming majority of brands have a long way to go. So my belief is that while you can't fake warmth on the outside, one of the things that I think is really important is for brands to start displaying it inside their companies. Tell me what your thoughts about that are.
I think you're absolutely correct. And the work that we've done in studying the companies that have the strongest, most fanatical customer loyalty, in almost every case we find, it is driven by incredible warmth and commitment and loyalty inside the company and the way employees are treated and managed and empowered. And that it's very difficult to have genuine warmth and empathy and concern for customers if your employees are not feeling that love on the inside. So there's a direct relationship between the two.
And loyalty, then, is loyalty organic nowadays?
Explain a little more. I'm not sure what you mean.
Is it just bred from people who really see that authenticity? I mean, and that's, you know, it's not about me buying your product because I get a discount.
Absolutely correct. That loyalty is much more about whether I feel I know and trust a person on the other side. And, you know, one of the things I think is really surprising is the work that we've done on loyalty programs, which I think in most cases is kind of a misnomer, that what we consider to be a loyalty program or a rewards program is not very much about loyalty at all. It's about kind of buying transactions with discounts and rewards, and that in many cases there isn't any real attitudinal or trust-based loyalty associated with those. And that loyalty, you know, frankly, we are not loyal to companies and brands. We're loyal to people or what we believe we know about the people on the other end. And so it's genuinely through the acts of people on the other end that demonstrate that they know who I am, they care who I am, and are willing to do some things that are in my best interest that may not be in their best interest in the short term. That's what causes us to trust. That's what causes us to be committed. And then we're really happy to do business with them at full price, because it's more about what I know about that person than it is, you know, what I'm getting for what I'm paying.
Chris, are we starting to see the end of these rewards type programs? I walk into a grocery store the other day and they say that we don't use these things anymore. Are we starting to see a shift?
I think we are. We've seen research that suggests that both merchants and customers are worse off from the use of these loyalty programs from a couple of standpoints. One is that they cost a lot to implement. I was fortunate in the hotel business to run a 10 million member loyalty program. We had to set aside nearly $100 million every year to account for the rewards that we'd pay for that. We had to have actuaries come in and manage the reserves. We had to kind of build in all kinds of tactics to try to make sure the subscription and redemption of those was not too high. And then there's all the money to all the cost of administering. demonstrating it. And then in addition, that got reflected in higher prices passed along to the customers. And so in the end, the folks that really end up, you know, making out are the ones selling the picks and shovels, the guys selling the technology and the tools and the management services for the loyalty programs. But we don't think that they really result in greater loyalty, and they have simply become ubiquitous anyway. All of your competitors can offer the same thing.
Chris, now as somebody who really has embraced this whole philosophy of warmth and competence and this whole philosophy that brands are human, is there a telltale sign for you of what brands are or what individuals are loyal to a brand?
In terms of how you tell which customers are loyal, is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, is there a telltale test of loyalty for a brand?
I think that in one of a very strong indication is how much you are, your purchases are based on price. You know, Amazon has done a remarkable job of building scale and getting very large by offering a very large selection and offering very low prices, often undercutting bricks and mortar retailers and so forth. But we feel that their loyalty is largely based on price. And if that price advantage went away, there's an awful lot that of customers that probably wouldn't stay with them. The contrast that we would look at would be someone like Zappos, for instance, and that Zappos has remarkable customer loyalty, fanatical customer loyalty. 75% of their sales every day are from the same customers, and they sell at full price, full retail. But they do all kinds of other things that demonstrate that they really care about their customers first, whether it's free shipping or 24-hour customer service or returns up to 365 days later, that's the kind of connection that customers are responding to, and it's not really based on price. So I think price is a real strong indicator.
And I think it always has. Chris, you talk about, speaking of that, you talk about the principle of worthy intentions, which is, well, very worthy, and you use a terrific example, Zane's Bike Shop, to describe it. Put that in context for us.
Sure. So if I were to try to boil down everything we've learned about the psychological process of warmth and competence and how people connect with one another, I would call the worthy intentions, the principle of worthy intentions, how I'd put it in a nutshell for you. And it's very simply is if we go out of our way to try to put the best interest of our customers first in everything that we do, we will demonstrate warmth, we will demonstrate competence, and they will feel loyalty toward us. Now, that doesn't require us to recklessly disregard our own interests, but rather recognize that keeping our interests in balance with those of our customers is the only way to make sure that we both benefit. And so at Zane Cycles, they made some very courageous decisions back when Walmart entered the Northeast and started to really eat up a lot of the bicycle market share. And what they decided was that they were going to really compete on the basis of their relationships with customers. And one of the simple ways that they can do that, in most cases, demonstrating worthy intentions, it's really about the little things. But they decided that all the parts and things that they sold in their store that were less than $2, that they were simply going to give to their customers free. And that, you know, those little chain links and nuts and bolts and things, they didn't want them to feel nickel and dimed. And often when you're coming in with a broken chain or an unhappy child or something like that, the last thing you want to feel is like you're getting nickel and dimed for these little things. And they found that over the course of a year, those $2 parts only make up about 1% of their sales overall, but they were able to build tremendous loyalty with their customers by showing, you know, we're going to give to you first. We're going to demonstrate loyalty to you first before we expect anything in return. And they never had a problem competing with Walmart after that.
You know what's funny? I think one of the things I picked up from just reading your example in the book is that what he has done is he's bet on the lifetime value of that customer and not
Absolutely.
That single $2 transaction.
That is absolutely right. And that's what we mean by a relationship renaissance, is that at the end of the day, the key to your success in a much more profitable way to do business and a way to grow much more consistently is enter every interaction with the intention of building a lasting relationship with that person. Not only because of the lifetime value of the business that they could do with you, but also the word of mouth value, the referral value, the reputation value that comes along with that, it just pays dividends in ways that we can never anticipate in advance.
Yeah. And you said something really interesting that really stood out for me in the book, where you talk about people judge other people's success by whether they deserve it, not by whether they've earned it. Very interesting. Just elaborate on that for me.
Sure. So we tend to perceive people in these basic warmth and competence ways, and that in many cases, if they are a person who is not in a warm, friendly, trustworthy, and honest, that in many cases, we don't feel that they perhaps have earned that success. That we kind of view them as competent but not very warm. The emotion that we feel is kind of envy and jealousy, and the behavior that kind of goes along with that is grudging cooperation, but in kind of a very distrustful way. And so when we see someone that way have success, it's not something that we admire. It's something that we envy but are skeptical of, and that we are not likely to support or encourage or help them sustain that success. And so it does has a negative impact on our behavior and our loyalty towards them.
Chris, I'm going to go back to entrepreneurs for a minute because you've got lots of startups and lots of founders listening to our broadcast. You know, they start with an idea. They're an unknown name. They have an unproven track record, yet they want to get traction in the marketplace. What advice do you have for them early on to start getting traction and creating awareness?
Sure. A couple of things. One is I believe that the benefits of scale have been greatly overrated, especially when it comes to interacting with customers. And so, for instance, if we thought that taking all of our business online, getting lots of scale, getting lots of transaction, getting lots of volume, whether it's through discounts or through a lot of outbound traffic driving activity, that is not the kind of interaction that's going to build a loyal customer following. And as a smaller business or as a startup business, you have a tremendous opportunity to connect with people on an individual basis. You're not so large yet that you have to kind of do things in a scaled way, and that the opportunity to connect with that individual, demonstrate some worthy intentions, demonstrate some loyalty to them, and start to build a relationship is exactly what larger companies are not doing at all anymore. So much of what we have come to expect as standard operating procedure in business is just fundamentally at odds with the warmth and competence expectations that we have as humans. It's no wonder that despite that we have more ways to communicate with customers than ever before, customer loyalty has never been lower. And so my advice would be, focus on building those relationships one customer at a time. Think of it of kind of Johnny Appleseed dropping seeds everywhere you go, because you never know which ones of those are going to spring up, and that those relationships are the kind of growth that you're going to get that is going to be very difficult for a larger company to take away from you.
And Chris, there's always some gray areas on whether the brand of a startup, for example, is the founder or the company. How do you see that?
I think that what we are realizing is that whether you're a small company or a large company, that you need a human face on your company and brand, and that it is just in our nature, whether we realize it or not, and whether the customer has direct interaction with us or not, that their natural psychological thought process is they're trying to figure out what are the warmth and competence and intentions of the people that I'm dealing with. And so if you're a smaller organization, it's a huge opportunity for you to be out in front, put a human face on your company, let them know who you are. When we think of the Richard Bransons and the Steve Jobs and the Howard Schultz and the Oprah Winfreys, the fact that they are out in front and easy for us to see, it makes it that much easier to process who we're dealing with, that much easier to trust and become loyal to them. There are certainly lots of CEOs that don't exude warmth and competence, and we see right through that as well, and we get very cautious about it. But I would say get right out in front, and you are, in many respects, the leader of the tribe that people perceive as your brand. And the more we know about the leader of that tribe, it tells us what we can expect from the rest of the company and from your products and services.
And Chris, in technology and web-related businesses, the competence component can be much easier to showcase than the warmth component. I mean, what have you found works effectively to enhance that sense of warmth, especially if it's a web online e-commerce type business?
Great question. And I think that everything that we've seen with respect to technology over the last 20 years had led us to believe that it's all about the competence, right? It's all about the better mousetrap. And there's certainly important for us to have competent, good products that deliver what they say they are. But that's kind of like minimum expectations. It's price of entry. I think what you really want to do is find balance for all the ways that we're demonstrating competence, for all the ways that we're generating scale with technology. We want to counterbalance that with opportunities for people people to interact with us directly, whether it's, you know, having a telephone number that you make widely available and easy for someone to reach a live human on the other end. All that interaction with the human is where we pick up all the warmth, competence, and intentions of other people. It could be through chat. It could be through email. What you want to try to avoid is becoming the faceless monolith that is just the name of the company without a person or face on the other end that so many large companies have become. And so the advice would be to put a human face on that and balance that competence with lots of human interactions and touch points that show what your intentions are and give people some of that material that we need to judge warmth, competence, and loyalty.
And as you know, with entrepreneurs, you know, it's always the path is not always linear to the top, right? There are going to be some missteps. There are going to be some false starts. How about second chances? Talk to me at the process of recognizing that, hey, we've screwed up and fixing it. How does that start to take into shape when you're talking about competence and warmth?
Well, you know, it is fascinating to us, the remarkable capacity that customers have for forgiveness. And that what we've learned by studying major recalls and scandals is that in many cases, those are actually huge opportunities to leave customers more satisfied than if we hadn't had a problem at all. It all depends on what were our intentions and how do we respond afterwards. So while it might be our tendency to say, gosh, I made a mistake, I hope anybody finds out about that, sweep under the rug, clean it up and hope it goes away, what we've found is that most cases, customers don't get an everyday opportunity to find out whether we care more about them or our profit. And so when a mistake happens, if we bring it to their attention and say, you know what, we had good intentions, we made a mistake, to look out for your best interests and through an abundance of caution, we're going to take responsibility for this. We're going to make it right and make sure we demonstrate that we are looking out for you first. Customers are often saying, you know what, a lapse of competence is completely forgivable. And you know what, that causes me, it's a way that you've demonstrated you really do care about me. And I actually trust and am more loyal to you now than if the problem had never happened.
And is there a way to accelerate regaining that trust, Chris?
I think it all comes down to how honestly and transparently that you handle the situation. You know, many of the most high-profile scandals that we have seen are, you know, real moments of truth. You know, whether it's the Toyota accelerator scandal or the BP oil rig disaster or what have you, or the Tylenol tampering scandals, those were all moments of truth that put those companies on the radar screen in a very high profile way and told us by their actions how well we could trust them. And so we found, for instance, that the McNeil company that has had the Tylenol product basically off the shelf for most of the last 2 years because they handled it very responsibly, shut down the only plant in North America that made it and only recently started re-advertising and introducing it. All through that 2 year period, customer loyalty and purchase intent for Tylenol remained above that of Advil, even though you couldn't really buy much of it. And so it all comes down to how you handle that and whether you use that as an opportunity to show who you really are.
And Chris, are we in an era where standing for some social cause is just expected today?
You know, I think that to the extent that we have seen rapid growth of cause-based businesses and socially responsible businesses is a reflection of what we want to know about people on the other end. I don't think, you know, the growth of Tom's Shoes or Honest Tea is necessarily all about the causes that they stand for, but rather it tells us something about those people that tells us they have good intentions towards others and they're putting the interests of others first, and that we assume that they will treat us the same way. It activates that warmth. It's a demonstration of worthy intentions, even if that cause is not one that we are personally attached to. And so I think it is just another example of how we want to know that the people that we're doing business with care something more than about maximizing their own shareholder value or profit, because it turns out that maximizing shareholder value is not an intention that's worthy of much customer loyalty.
So the bottom line is be human in every interaction, in every opportunity, whether it's inside your business or outside your business, be human.
And be a good human towards other people, right? And that whether we realize it or not, all the decisions we are making on the basis of whether the other people are human and whether we feel trust and loyalty towards them. And so rather than try to kind of put up a facade and keep them at arm's length and not have to know who's on the other side, let's embrace that and use it as a way to build lasting relationships with people, because that's how we're being judged whether we like it or not.
Well, you're a great human towards all of your followers. I appreciate you taking the time. The book has just come out. Let everyone know, how do they learn more about the depth of the work that you do and specifically the book?
Well, thanks very much, Mo. They can find more information out at thehumanbrand.com, where we've got a free application that allow you to play with the concepts of warmth and confidence, as well as find lots of other tools and insights that you may find useful.
Thank you, Chris.
Pleasure to talk with you, Mo.